Good morning and welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church in beautiful Heartland, Wisconsin. This is a congregation where all the adults are good-looking and the children are above average.
Amen.
If I may quote Garrison Keillor. My name is Gus. I'm a star with only one name, all right? And I'm this morning's representative from the church board. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. Actually, we don't have a variety. I've got one here, which I'm going to read to you now. Today is the monthly food pantry collection, sponsored by the Social Action Committee. This month's collection is for the Heartland Food Pantry. Monetary donations will be collected during the offertory. Loose cash donations will go to the food pantry. Checks can be made out to LCUUC, with the amounts for the food pantry and for LCUUC noted on the memo line down in the corner of each check. Or you can put that also on the envelope if you put the check in an envelope. And now I invite you to greet those around you. And since we don't have so many people here, now I'm an ex-Catholic so I can say this, you might want to consider moving forward a little bit because If I were Brett, I would not want to have to preach to people way back in corners or whatever. So if you don't mind, if it's not a big deal, could you come forward a little bit, please? Thank you. Now you can greet each other.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for doing that. Okay, put your telephones on silence mode. If you have brought electronic equipment in here that makes noises, or turn them off. Do whatever you feel is required there. I'm going to turn mine off. I don't see a lot of new faces here. I see people that have visited before. Are there any new faces here? Anybody visiting for the first time who has never been at one of our services before? Okay, that's good because that means I can skip number 6 on this thing, which is about like that long. All right. I will be, if anyone needs to talk to somebody with a great deal of experience in life and wisdom, I will be in the church hall after. Do I hear laughter? After the service. Please, I already did that part. Okay, I hope you find this morning's service interesting, and I'm sure you will. The Reverend Brett Myers is with us today, and he has visited with us before. He lives in Hartford, Wisconsin, and is an ordained pastor in the United Church of Christ. He has also served 2 Unitarian Universalist congregations before. So we welcome Brett Myers to talk to us today.
Cellist lighting words are from Albert Schweitzer. At times, our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us. Please remain seated and join us in singing the cellist lighting song, and the words are in your order of service.
Thank you.
before we do the responsive reading called Centering Our Souls in Our Worship, I'd like to read for you a little poem called I Am the New Year. I am the new year. I am an unspoiled page in your book of time. I am your next chance at the art of living. I am your opportunity to practice what you have learned about life during the last 12 months. All that you sought and didn't find is hidden in me, waiting for you to search it with a little more determination. All the good that you tried for and didn't achieve is mine to grant you when you have fewer conflicting desires. All that you dreamed but didn't dare to do, all that you hoped but did not will, all the faith that you claimed but did not have, these slumber lightly, waiting to be awakened by the touch of a strong purpose. And now join me in the centering of our souls, a responsive reading. At the dawn of a new year, like Janus, we both look back to the year past and look forward to the year to come. Forgiving ourselves and others of what is past, we beckon new beginnings and prepare our hearts, minds, and souls to welcome what is to come in 2012. We want to build relationships of loving kindness and characters of compassion. We want to find our bliss, but also to be the givers of blessings. Join with me in singing number 6 from the hymnal, Just As Long As I Have Breath. Exception of the children and kids, I'd like to have you to come forward. And you can be kids at heart and also come forward. So, good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you today. I'm going to talk a little bit today about a horse. and also a chickadee. Anybody know what a chickadee is? Yeah, it's a little bird, a little bird. This is a story that comes from a UU pastor called Liz Lerner. It's a true story, so I'm just going to read this story. She says, "The story begins during a winter when I was living in a cottage on a farm in the Hudson River Valley. A number of people rented houses on the property, which we shared with an assortment of dogs, cats, peacocks, chickens, goats, pigs, and horses, kept by people who lived there. One of the other residents was Tinker, an elderly bay horse belonging to the owners of the farm. He had been a hunter-jumper in his day, but in his old age mostly spent time in the pasture at his ease. One day he developed colic, an intestinal condition in which horses can easily be fatal. The owners were away and the vet was unreachable. A friend from the farm and I spent all day working on him. The most important thing when a horse is colicking is to keep him from rolling on the ground, which they do a sort of like a big dog. Horses naturally want to roll when their stomachs hurt as a way to dispel the ache. But if their intestine twists as a result of rolling, the only treatment that can save them is surgery, which in horses is usually cost prohibitive. So you have to try to keep them from rolling, which with something as big and strong as a horse is really, really hard. I did my best, which was walking Tinker around in the field for hours, always keeping him moving, never letting him stop and starting to go down. But often I was alone while my friend was on the phone trying to get a vet to come to help us. And eventually Tinker got himself on the ground and rolled. It was January, and he was rolling on snow. About the third time he rolled, he lay tired and still for a moment, and I saw some blood spotting the snow crimson. It was coming from his mouth. It was hard to tell whether he was bleeding from the throat or if he had injured his mouth and his throats, but either way, the sight of the tired, old, kind horse lying on the snow, with that inward look that animals and people get when they are suffering, made me sure that we were losing him. Eventually, the vet came and gave him a treatment, an injection, to try to give him ease and time for the treatment to work. In 6 hours, we would know. Either he would come again to be in pain, or his digestive system would resume functioning. 6 hours passed, during which I walked him every hour to try to help him get his digestive works up and going again. He looked around, interested and vital again on our walks. Gentle, his breath blowing beside mine in the winter air. About 5.5 hours, when I checked on him again, he turned his head and looked at his stomach. A bad sign. Soon, he was again in great pain, and now there was nothing more to do. The vet came back, and the owner came home, and I said goodbye to Tinker and went to my house, leaving them alone to put him down with an injection. Spring won through and renewed us. Summer unfolded in the long, green, hot days, and then fall began to crisp the air at night. And one day early in autumn, I was working in my office at home when I heard something bang against the inside of the window. Almost the same moment, from the corner of my eye, I saw two cats streak avidly into the room behind me. I turned around and saw something move in a plant on the windowsill. I went over and parted the leaves, and sitting on a frond was a small, young black-capped chickadee with a wing twisted awkwardly behind him. His beak was parted, his breast was heaving, and he was looking straight at me. I shooed the cats away, picked the bird up, and took him far into an upper field. I sat by a rock under a wild crab apple tree and looked at my handful. He was very small, with bright black eyes and a very tiny, thick, short, dark eyelashes. He was looking right at me, into my eyes and panting, and I saw that there was blood on the inside of his beak. I thought of Tinker and the blood on the snow and wished this wouldn't end in death again. The bird didn't move or try to get away. He seemed perfectly comfortable in my hands. After about 10 minutes, I gingerly began to try to ease his protruding wing into a position like his other wing, which was lying smoothly against his side. He let me, and soon, at least the wing looked okay, but I was afraid it was hurt, perhaps broken. I tried lifting my hands to give him some impetus to make a try at flying, but he didn't move. He just sat in my cupped hand, panting less, looking at me, and looking at me, and looking at me. Gradually, he closed his beak, and his breath slowed, and finally, he ruffled his feathers and settled his wings just a little. Still, he showed no inclination to move, and so after a few minutes, I shifted to rise, thinking to try to place him on a branch of the tree and see if he would hold on to himself. As I moved, he burst out of my hand and flew right onto the branch where I was about to place him. He looked at me some more, and then he flew away. It is many years now since the day that I failed to try to help Tinker, and it's almost as long since that bird flew from my hand. His flight does not redeem or mitigate Tinker's loss, but it does stand somehow against it. I couldn't save the horse, but I could save the bird. And that comforts me. I know that even if it never worked, I would have to keep trying to save things regardless of the odds. But the bird's story reminds me sometimes it is possible. We can save some things sometimes. And I hope that this will be a nice lesson for you in the new year of 2012 to always try to save things. Thank you very much for coming up.
This is the special time in our service where we share our joys and concerns with each other in spiritual community. If you have a joy or concern that you'd like to share, raise your hand and our usher will bring you the microphone. Tell us your first name and then briefly state your joy or concern. I'll light a candle to represent the light of the new year and the light that we actively seek in each other and that we nourish in each other.
My name is Gus, and sorry about that. My name is Gus, and I would like to light a candle of joy for the great support I got on the death of my mother. I must have gotten about 95 emails from members of this congregation, and I tell you, it was a great help. And I could even feel the energy, positive energy, coming my way for those that sent it and believe in that sort of thing. So I want to thank everybody for doing that.
Hi, I'm Tony. I wanted to light a candle of joy for the relatively easy winter we've had so far, and then also a candle of hope for those, whatever it is, 26 million Americans who are out of work, who are stressed out at this time of year, and any among the congregation who are in that position.
Laura, my name is Helen. If you could light a candle of joy, we have a new addition to our family. We have adopted a rescue dog from Tony and his wife, who are the foster parents, and they announced it in church, and everything, that energy pointed its way. So we've had him for 2 or 3 days, and it's been wonderful.
I recently helped serve a meal at the Hope Center, and I just it had been years since I'd done something like that for some reason, and was just jolted into the reality of so many people's situation, and just appalled that we have this situation in this country. And my concern is that we can improve for people that, you know, like a night like last night or any cold, you know, as certain as we go into winter, I just find it astounding that some people don't have a place to stay. Thanks.
My name is Marie-Claude McNulty. I have a concern and a joy to share. The joy is that we spent Christmas with all our children came home for Christmas, including our one and only six-month-old granddaughter. And the concern is for my daughter-in-law's father, who has just been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
I'm Amy. Please light a candle of concern for our nephew who's just simply trying to find his way in the world.
The last candle for the joys and concerns we keep in our hearts.
It's nice to be part of a spiritual fellowship where people get to share with one another of what's on their heart and on their minds, and that's part of the blessing of having such a place to come to. So please be that blessing to each other for 2012. Well, I'll have a little poem to read here, and then we'll just have some silent meditation after the poem. The poem is called 2012, Becoming the Blessing. It is actually in your bulletin. Darkness has had its way, but now the days are growing longer. The winter is not yet over, but the light is getting stronger. We say goodbye to failures and all in which we fear. We welcome possibility as we enter the new year. We hope to become better than we ever were before. The discipline of faith and love will help us through that door. We promise not to shun the joys of happiness, but still we'll work for justice to increase life's blessedness. We'll cultivate the silence that opens us to beauty while weeding out the noise that distracts us from our duty. Embracing one another will open up our hearts, denying neither sorrows nor laughter's healing arts. Relationships will blossom and peace will have its way. These are the things we'll dream of and think and do and say. Let us be in silent meditation. Join with me in singing number 123 from our hymnal, Spirit of Life.
Thank you.
I think that I'm probably a better writer than I am a speaker, and so I had actually written a little piece that I was going to do as the talk today, but as I never say what I write, I'll just read the last portion of it as the reading for today. There are certain benefits to wanting to give blessings more than we receive them. There is a certain self-respect one acquires, and a confidence that whatever others may do with their lives, you are solid in your own values and do not need to receive their commendation or approval to feel that your life, if not a success, is still significant. To be spiritually significant to others is the greatest experience I've ever had. To matter in a deep way to someone's life, even if it be for a momentary time, is incomprehensibly satisfying. Life, despite all its hardships, then seems purposeful. And despite all the unanswered questions and searching for answers that help one negotiate the obstacles of a society with values so unlike one's own, those moments where someone has let you know that you have been a blessing are moments that ripple throughout the years of our lives and give us a sense that our lives have meaning. I'm going to come down here simply because it feels a little more comfortable and a little bit more homey. So that should be how we bring in the new year, I think, is to be homey and to be friends with one another. As I was thinking about what to talk about on New Year's Day, several things came to mind. But as I think as people, what they do on this day or maybe a little bit before is they make resolutions about what they would like to do differently about their life. Maybe how that they would like to improve their lives. Sometimes people go to the bookstore. I love bookstores myself. I've noticed that there's a huge self-help section in the bookstore. I have yet to find any section in any bookstore anywhere I've ever been. I've been to quite a few of them that says other help. It's all self-help. When I was in college, I was studying the world religions. I knew my own, which I come from a Christian background, and there were certain things about my own religion, being in southern Indiana where I grew up, very conservative area. I didn't know there were other forms of Christianity other than the ones that I got brought up in. And so there was a lot of things that I had problems with that particular brand of Christianity. Since I've found more progressive understandings of the faith, and so I'm fine with that. But when I was studying the world religions, one religion in particular, Buddhism, was something that really struck a chord with me. And I noticed that there was two main traditions. There was the Hinayana or Theravada Buddhism, and there was the Mahayana Buddhism as well. And in the former, it was basically, and I'm no Buddhist scholar, so if I make a misspeak on that, those of you who know Buddhism better, please forgive me. But my impression was is that the Hinayana or the Theravada Buddhism was really kind of emphasizing how we can spiritually discipline ourselves, do the prayers, the meditations, all the things that we need to do to focus on how we are not a self, or how that we are absorbed into the greater universal self, the Atman, as they called it. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. Then I started reading about the Mahayana version, which says, well, yeah, that's the ultimate goal. We want to achieve enlightenment for ourselves and eventually go on to nirvana. Well, that sounds all good and fine. But the thing that that I saw between the two different branches of Buddhism is that the Mahayana seem to focus a lot more on what we do for others and not simply for ourselves. And I thought, this is a lot closer to what I was brought up in believing myself, and it rings a little truer. There was, I even wrote a paper, I remember, when I was in college on it. It was called the Bodhisattva Ethic. And it's basically that a Bodhisattva is one who, on the way to enlightenment or having attained enlightenment, decides, I'm going to go back and help others so that they can also obtain it. And that looking out for others over oneself even, that too resounded in my own spirit. As I think about the way that we look at New Year's, oftentimes our resolutions are about good things that we can do for ourselves. They're about how we can maybe lose a little bit of weight, maybe use some Rogaine or something to restore our hair. it's something in which we can improve ourselves in the coming year, that there can be some blessing to us that we will receive for having disciplined ourselves to do certain things and not doing other things. But as I thought about resolutions, I thought they're often about us individually. They're not so much about what we can do for somebody else. It's about how we can improve ourselves and garner blessings for ourselves, but not so much about how we can be a blessing to someone else. Now, there are some exceptions to the rule, and I'm sure that most of you here are those exceptions, and so I'm preaching to the choir, I'm sure, in many respects. But nonetheless, it is a way of looking at what we want to do in the coming year that makes a big difference. Now, some people will argue, well, if you're doing something for yourself and it helps you out, it's going to have that kind of ripple effect and it's going to help others too. No question, I agree 100%. But it's a whole different matter to put as your motive, as your inspiration to do something for others. It just kind of gives a different framework for which you do things. And so as I was thinking about that, I was thinking, what are some things that we can do for each other? Now, if you happen to read your newsletter, you knew that I was going to ask you if you have any resolutions to go ahead and share them with me. So anybody have any resolutions that they'd like to share? Yeah. Excellent. Thank you. Anyone else have it? Yeah, Gus. Thank you. Yes. solutions. Yeah, cool.
I'm Robin Reed, and I'm
Thankful for something.
Yeah, I owe a lot to a couple of friends here sitting right by me who came and rescued me, and they didn't rescue me quite in time to save me from what I had to do yesterday, but this is getting complicated, but I had been to my son's Christmas celebration, and they live way over on the other side of town. And but coming back, I noticed my gas was very low, and so I stopped at a filling station, and the guy raved how empty it was. Well, I could see a little tiny bit on the bottom of the stick, but he got some special stuff he was going to put in it, and but it wasn't the best oil, but he said I should take it out when I got home. So they put that in and drove all the way home, and it worked like it sounded like a top. But this morning, or yesterday, I turned the ignition and the little lights lit up, but went and nothing happened.
Not a good sound.
No. So after a while, I figured maybe something had gelled in the engine, and I called on my neighbors here, Ellen and Mike Barrett, and they said, yeah, they could come to the rescue. And so they came out, and that's my long story.
Thank you for sharing.
It's nice to have great people like that.
Indeed. I was reading in preparing for this a few sermons from some other UU pastors. I always figure that's a good thing. When I've been preaching in Christian churches most of the time, I kind of get the spirit and the flavor of things. And one of the interesting things is that one of the pastors, was actually at the Old Souls in Washington, D.C., had a pastor a sermon online, and it was a New Year's one, and was talking about that in... Back in the 19th century, UU pastors at that time would often distinguish between a resolution and consecration. Now, we don't use the word consecration so much anymore, and I can already see some looks like, But it's interesting, the point that he made, not in the sense of necessarily a theistic way of looking at this, but that consecration, the pastor was saying, is different from resolution in a couple different ways. One, resolution is about your willpower and that alone, which is oftentimes why resolutions don't work. Consecration, on the other hand, is a kind of a seeing yourself in partnership with the sacred, with that which is divine. And so that partnership of being, if you ever decide that you want to do a resolution, you have somebody to do it with you, it's always easier to do that than it is to do it by yourself. And so that feeling that you're in a partnership, and it's with something that is sacred, that's the difference. Resolution, too, and that last point, is that it doesn't necessarily have to be something that you see as sacred. Consecration, on the other hand, is something in which you look at in life as though this is going to make a difference. This is not about just improving your body, your mind. It is about improving what is best about you. It is about making your life a difference, significant to not only yourself but also to others. And basically, it's about being a blessing. To others. So they made those distinctions. I thought that was kind of an interesting way to frame that. As I was thinking about what I was going to share with you as far as my New Year's resolutions, I'm not exactly sure that they're resolutions per se, but more kind of a reflection about how we should be in this world, of how we can be a blessing to others. And I thought long and hard for actually a couple weeks on this matter. So hopefully the list that I give you, I hope that you'll find as informative. But I've got a list of 21 things, actually, of ways to be a blessing. And the first is being present. It's not always what you say, but your effort at being there that shows that you really care. I was taught this lesson by my grandfather, who was a pastor, and I asked him one time after a funeral that he was at, I said, you know, Grandpa, how do you know the things to say to folk when they're, you know, suffering and they've just lost a loved one? And kind of like Gus was saying earlier, it's not so much all the things that you say, it's that people know that you are there for them and that you care, and that's the thing that matters most. So being present is the first way to be a blessing. Being a listening ear, hearing people out without interrupting them, and giving your undivided attention. That's a second way of being a blessing. Sometimes that's a very hard thing to do, but if we simply can train ourselves to simply listen and hear somebody out, it can be a wonderful blessing. Sometimes I found myself, and being a pastor, I have to do a lot of listening. You'd think that I do a lot of speaking, but actually I do more listening than I do speaking. And the thing that I've learned is sometimes I don't have to say anything at all. It's simply kind of like the first one, being there and listening attentively, and people will come to their own enlightenment. Third, showing emotion. Especially for the guys here, I think the women have a much better grasp on this than we guys do, but showing emotion, willing to share a tear, a smile, a laugh. Commiseration builds bonds. The fourth thing is being tactile, holding somebody's hand, giving them a hug, giving them an embrace, a kiss on the cheek, or a pat on the shoulder. There was an experience at one of the churches I served early in my ministry in which a woman who had been coming to church for some time, a gentleman had passed away, was not her husband, to my knowledge, was not even a very close friend with this person, but obviously, you know, we'd see them talking together on Sundays and stuff, and she said, "I will really miss him because every Sunday, without fail, he would give me a pat on the shoulder, and it was the only touch I received all week." Knowing that we can have an impact on somebody's lives simply by reaching out and being tactful of touching, what a blessing that can be. The fifth thing is spending time at your own expense, willing to reorganize your schedule in order to help somebody else out. To be generous with your attention, to give to others, is much more valuable than gifts or presents. For all of those who have just come through Christmas time and thought that you know, the giving gifts was the most important thing, this one might be a shocker to us, but actually giving our attention to others is often prized much more than all those gifts. And the sixth thing is revealing empathy. Putting yourself in the other's place, feeling what they feel, imagining their situation based on their values and experiences and ways of being rather than your own. So it takes a little bit of an imagination to truly be empathetic, but it is a wonderful way to be a blessing. Thinking before you speak, being deliberate, intentional, and giving your best answers to their questions based on them and not on you. Based on who they are and not who you are. In a way, this is kind of applied empathy. So empathy is having the feeling, but the thinking before you speak and genuinely caring for people, that's the applied empathy side of it. And speaking of genuinely caring, that's the eighth, caring for their welfare above all else. Not watching the clock, pastors know this quite quite readily. People will be looking at their watches and such during the service, but really being attentive, thinking about how time spent with them will affect you, and putting people over your job and even your duties. I have to give a quick little story. 2 weeks ago, there was a woman that I saw, and she was seeming like she was a little bit distressed. I was at my workplace, which is Wisconsin Memorial Park. I'm a family service counselor there currently. And she came in, and she said, "I just need a place to make a phone call." So she did, in my office. I gave her a little privacy there. And when she got done with her phone call, she said, she kind of looked at me, and I said, "What's wrong?" And she said, "We have a boy in our family. We're here for the funeral of his great-grandmother. She died recently, unexpectedly, even though she was in her 90s. But it's really been hard on him, and he's suicidal." And I have had a little bit of counseling experience. I said, "Would you like me to talk with the family if they would like to do so?" And she said, I'd love it. And she said, "I don't know if they will or not, but let me know." I actually had a meeting that I was supposed to go to at that time, but I told the receptionist, "Pull me out of the meeting if this woman comes back and they would like to talk." And so about 5-10 minutes later, I got pulled out of the meeting. I was supposed to be there. I was actually kind of glad to be out of the meeting, to be honest. But it was something that was really with a job that I was supposed to be doing, which I'm told is selling. This was something that wasn't going to benefit me whatsoever, with the exception of my spirit, and knowing that I was trying to help somebody else out, to be a blessing to somebody else. And so we talked, and what was a very anxious time for that family ended up after a little a conversation and encouragement to go get counseling for a counselor who would be able to follow up with him for a long time, became something in which there was a lot of hope. And that was just a beautiful experience. It didn't help me. Probably if my supervisors would have known what I was doing, they probably wouldn't have liked it even. But it is trying to take time out of your world, out of even the things that are your duties, to be a blessing to somebody else. So that one is I think, a very important part of caring for the welfare of others over all else. The next thing is to be gentle and peaceful. Tending to others' emotions and likely responses, considering how what you say and do will affect them and their relationship with you and with others. Being gentle is something that we all can work on. Certainly as a nation, we need to listen to this one as a whole. I'm really thankful that at the end of 2011, beginning of 2012, we have one less war, and I'm thankful for that. Being compassionate and merciful. Treating people lovingly as people, as persons of inestimable worth and value, rather than judging them for what they did or how they messed up. Valuing them as a child of God or the sacred, not assessing their childish or wrongful behavior. That's what being compassionate and merciful to me is all about. When people are going to make errors, I've certainly made my share of them many times. But it is being compassionate and merciful to others, and hopefully that they will be to you. The next thing is also a somewhat difficult one to do, forgiving. And I'm going to say, unlike oftentimes forgiving is just kind of a blanket statement, but I'm going to say maturely forgiving. That is, letting people actually know what they did and what was wrong about what they did, how it hurt you or others, or was otherwise wrong, and even holding them accountable for their actions, and having them make up for whatever damage that they caused, while also letting them know that they are valued more than their actions. That you want with them reconciliation more than you want the barrier that their actions have caused. that it will take effort on their part to rebuild trust in the relationships, but that you are open to letting them do this without holding a grudge and repeatedly reminding them of how they failed. That you are less interested in controlling or manipulating the behavior than establishing a healthy and whole relationship between the two of you, and that in time you will forget what they did because you have been willing to see the sincerity, their sincerity, and doing better over what they once did. All of this, I think, is what it means to forgive in a mature way. The 12th thing is being honest and truthful with all in all dimensions. Not sugarcoating things, also not demonizing or exaggerating things. Not looking through rose-colored glasses. Sometimes we see, you know, just we want to build the esteem of somebody, so just tell them that they're doing well and they're doing great, even if they're not. This being honest and truthful is being able to tell them the truth without all that sugarcoating, while also being encouraging, which is the next one. Encouraging, not just with a one-time pep talk, but being engaged in their process of improvement, sharing your own struggles and stories of how you overcame difficulties, and complimenting them in the things that are best about them. Now, if you're going to be encouraging, there also needs to be another thing that you need to do, and that is to define some boundaries and implement them. In other words, don't be an enabler of their weaknesses. Tell them and show them what you expect from them. Love them while requiring them to respect themselves and their commitments, as well as respecting you and others with whom they are in relationship. The 15th thing is enjoying each other's company, laughing and having fun and doing things together, being a friend. Most of the stuff I've said so far is pretty serious stuff, but this one is where we get to let loose a little bit and just enjoy life with the other person. Now, sometimes that can be a hard thing if they've hurt you in some way, but being able to open yourself up to just enjoying life with someone is very important. The next thing is nurturing each other's spirit. I've thought of it, there's probably a million ways in which you can do this with somebody. These are some of the things that I thought that might be helpful. To read together, to go to a museum, to pray with or for each other, to discuss how things are going and strategies to reach your or their spiritual or moral goals, to go for a walk or a hike, to intentionally talk about matters of the heart, the mind, the spirit, and the soul. All these are ways that we can nurture each other's spirit. The 17th thing is engage in creative endeavors together. Maybe it's music or art or photography or writing or crafts. You name it. As long as it's creative and you're doing it together, it's something that'll be a blessing to others. The 18th thing is to see the humor in things and express it appropriately. Laughter is often the best medicine, especially when it's at yourself. It's not always quite as appropriate when you're hee-hawing about somebody else's mistake, but when you can do it about your own and people can see that you're lighthearted about yourself, they're much more receptive. The 19th thing, we're getting close to the end here, is to notice and compliment the little things and also the deeper things. Oftentimes we do mention, oh, I like your hair today. I like the tie that you have on. That's a wonderful dress that you have. But also when we notice something a little bit on the deeper side of where somebody has really exemplified the virtues or the values that you most want to hold in yourself, telling them about that is being a blessing to them. The 20th thing is, and this comes to our social justice side of things in the UU Church, advocating for others, speaking up for what is fair, just, and compassionate for them, creating a peaceful system by which they are offered an equal opportunity. And this is not only on a systemic level, but also on a very individual level as well. And lastly, the last way to be a blessing, and maybe it sums up all the others, live by the golden rule, and what sometimes has been called the platinum rule. The golden rule you know as treat others as you would want to be treated. Some have said that the platinum rule is treat others as they would want to be treated. There needs to be some wisdom in which way that you go with that. Sometimes how people want to be treated isn't also always going to be the best thing for them. Sometimes the way that you would want to be treated isn't something they would want for themselves. So having a little bit of wisdom in that. These are the ways in which I think in 2012 that I want to be a blessing in my life. And I hope that they've encouraged you to think about ways that you can be a blessing as well to others. So often we get so tied up with what's in it for me, and sometimes putting the focus on what can I be for somebody else, how can I be a blessing in somebody else's life, is the thing that really touches the heart chords the most. Blessing be. Amen. And I'll open it up. I don't know if we have that much time. I'll let others judge that. But if there is anything that you'd like to do for a polylog, I'd be glad to listen to your comments and let you be a blessing to me. So, yeah, John.
So much about forgiving the other, but forgiveness within ourselves leads to acceptance.
Yes.
And of others, and that's one of the biggest ways we can be a blessing.
Thank you. That is so true. I was thinking about doing a variety of different approaches to this morning, and one of the things I was going to focus on was three concepts: forgiveness, love. And the third one was grace. And I was going to say that, you know, forgiveness really is something that's very intentional. You have to want to do it. It's something that you have to be very conscious of. Loving is more of a something that we cultivate as a virtue within ourselves and kind of an attitude towards life. And the last thing is grace. We really don't have a whole lot of hand in it. It just happens for good. And so it's nice when that happens. But thank you. That just reminded me. Forgiveness is, it really is the kind of the beginning. If you're going to put 2011 behind, which we all have to do, you need to forgive yourself in order to really step into 2012. So thank you. Any others? Thoughts, comments? Two up front.
Ladies first.
Hi, my name is Helen. I guess one of the things that I struggle with is, and I'm not in the workplace, and I haven't been in the workplace. My husband's, you know, been fortunate enough to, you know, let me be at home parent for the last 13 years. But I see, you know, the struggle in the workplace of carrying that, all those great intentions into the workplace, and some of the places that, you know, he's been involved with lately aren't there. There isn't peace in the workplace, and how to motivate people. I mean, I'm you know, that's always a struggle for them. And we have teenagers, and it's, you know, gray hair dye, but that's one thing that's carried into the workplace to get, and that's something we are struggling with, I think, as a country too, is to help us to move forward, but also have all those intentions. And that's where the, and I feel like a clown sometimes, is balancing all these balls in the air as a parent. And so, you know, one we can work on, maybe pick one or two, but it's hard to work on 20. So I'm sitting there going, maybe when I'm 80, I'll. Like,
but believe me, I've got all these down pat myself, so.
Yeah, well, she said I was just 80, and that's the truth. I think there's something in being 80 that makes you kind of a goal for people to send pleas to and asking for money for their wonderful causes. And some of them are wonderful. And I have a desk full of letters that I have not yet gotten around to answering. Because I think there's about 40 of them, and I'd say about 12%, 14% are things that are really things I want to contribute to, but I'm just not made out of money, and so I've printed up a little sticker that I return their envelopes in their envelopes, and saying that I value your cause and I think it's wonderful, but I am not made of money and I can't contribute to everyone. So, but the ones that I have without doubt considered valuable as for this church, and also for the Hope Center. I've been a major donor to them too, and there are a few others. But and then politics, I can't tell you how much in politics that have come across my desk, and I want to times like this, I think that it's vital that we support good people. And so I'm getting kind of low in the pocket right now.
One of the things I was going to make mention of, and I was thinking about doing it as a preparatory comment to the 21 things I said, but if you'll notice, none of them had to involve financially whatsoever. So no matter where you're at on the economic spectrum, all these are things that we can work on. Not a one of them had to involve any kind of money or exchange of financial. So, others?
Kindness is, I don't think it means meekness. It means sort of approaching things with an open mind or an open heart. And maybe gentleness, but some have likened it the most powerful force in the universe. If we just had a more kind world, people weren't out to, you know, cut people's throats in business or literally in some places of the world. That sort of mean harshness that seems to stem out of fear which certainly comes up in me once in a while. And so for this year, I'd like to be kinder to myself and to my loved ones. And that's it.
Thank you. Thank you. Can I see another hand somewhere? Well, thank you for being a blessing to each other, to me. I'm always glad to be here, whether I'm up here or whether I'm where you guys are at. It's always a blessing to be here. I've been doing quite a bit of pulpit supply myself in other places, so I haven't been able to be here a lot lately, but anyway, it's always a blessing. So I hope that these will give you some food for thought. I did actually, some of you might want to take your bulletins home. I like to put a section called Nourishment for the Journey. to give you some food for thought for the coming week. So if you'd like to take those with you and read through some thoughts of others, some of them are anonymous, some of them are not, but hopefully they'll give you some insight or maybe just some encouragement. Right. And at this time, we'll have our offertory. So you're going to do that, Laura.
Sure.
Okay.
So the offertory will now be given and received in grateful appreciation of our shared hopes and values. Loose cash and undesignated checks will go to the Heartland Food Pantry.
In the deep night from a dark space, I hear voices calling out in heartache. They are wounded, they are broken, but their spirit rises when awoken.
Affirmation that's printed in your order of service. Spirit of blessing, breathe upon these gifts of tithes, of offerings, that they may be carried on the winds of grace and alight on those most in need. Kindle a fire of generosity within us, that we will not only give of these gifts today, but that we will give of ourselves every day for the betterment of our world. In this new year, may we resolve to be advocates for others so that truth will leap from our tongues, justice may issue forth from our hands, and passion may arise from our hearts. In all we say, in all we do, and in all we are. And so may we be blessed to be a blessing. May it be so. Please rise and join in the closing hymn number 121, verses 1 and 2 of We'll Build a Land.
The benediction is a New Year's prayer printed in your bulletin. Feel free to read along as I give this blessing. May 2012 be a year of happy and blessed one, not by shielding you from all sorrows and pain, but by strengthening you to bear it as it comes. Not by making your path easy, but by making you sturdy to travel any path. Not by taking hardships from you, but by taking fear from your heart. Not by granting you unbroken sunshine, but by keeping your face bright even in the shadows. Not by making your life always pleasant, but by showing you when people and their causes need you most, and by making you anxious to be there to help. Love, peace, hope, and joy to you and from you for the year ahead.
I will ease your mind. I go. Thank you.